Thank you for joining FDA Center for Drug Evaluation and Research Small Business and Industry Assistance, also known as CDER SBIA webinar series. My name is Commander Ray Ford, and I welcome you to today's presentation where we'll discuss our Pilot Clinical Outcome Assessment, also known as COA, compendium. The Pilot COA compendium organizes and summarizes clinical outcome assessment information for many different diseases and conditions into a single resource and was recently published for public comment. The COA compendium is intended to be used as a starting point when considering how COAs might be utilized in clinical trials and will likely most be informative early in drug development. This one-hour webinar will familiarize the audience with the recently announced Pilot COA compendium and address questions from the audience. Before we begin, we'd like to cover some logistics. Slides from today's presentation are posted at fda.gov/CDERSBIA under Workshops and Webinars. This webinar is being recorded and will be posted on that same website in approximately 7 days. There is no call-in number. The audio is via Adobe Connect only. Please note that this webinar offers one CE towards RAC recertification. A certificate of attendance will be awarded upon completion of the survey, which will be available after the link that is sent to you later on. It's now my pleasure to introduce our speakers and panelists. Our speakers are Dr. Electra Papadopoulos, the Acting Associate Director, Clinical Outcome Assessment Staff within the immediate office of the Office of New Drugs, or OND, followed by Dr. Nikunj Patel, who is a Clinical Outcome Assessment Reviewer with the COA staff in OND. Our panelists are Dr. Paul Klutz, Associate Director in the Office of Hematology and Oncology Products. Second, Dr. Kristana Fan, who is a medical officer within the Division of Anesthesia, Analgesia, and Addiction Products in the Office of Drug Evaluation 2, and Dr. Andrew Mulberg, Deputy Division Director, Division of Gastroenterology and Inborn Error Products in the Office of Drug Evaluation 3. Before our speakers begin, I'd like to remind you that the webinar will run approximately 60 minutes, which includes Q&A time. We'll take your questions from Adobe Connect. If you have a question, we encourage you to type it in the Q&A box on your screen throughout the webinar. We'll address only those questions which pertain to the material presented. It's now my pleasure to introduce Dr. Papadopoulos.
Thank you for the kind introduction, Ray, and to everyone who's able to participate in this afternoon's webinar. So I'm going to provide a brief introduction and summary of the COA compendium. And I just wanted to take some time to discuss the basics of the compendium, which is the Compendium of Clinical Outcome Assessments. And it was posted in pilot form in January of this year. The COA compendium was developed as part of the agency's effort to foster patient-focused drug development by collating and summarizing COA information for many different diseases and conditions in a single resource. And our motivation was to facilitate communication and transparency with our stakeholders, including drug developers and other parties. And for drug developers, we think it has greatest utility as a starting point for communications with the agency around outcome assessments. Clinical outcome assessments can be made through report by a clinician, a patient, a non-clinician observer, such as a parent or a caregiver, or could be performed by performance tests, such as cognitive tests or other tests of a patient's ability to perform specific tasks in a clinical setting. So, what is the Pilot COA compendium, and how did it come about? Development of this resource took place as a collaborative initiative by the COA staff and the Office of New Drugs with the Office of New Drugs Review Divisions. It was developed with three major objectives in mind. The first is to describe how certain clinical outcome assessments have been used in clinical trials to measure the patient's experience, such as disease-related symptoms, and to support labeling claims. The second is to identify clinical outcome assessments that have been qualified for potential use in multiple drug development programs under the Drug Development Tool Qualification Program of CDER. And the third major objective is to recognize ongoing qualification projects in order to encourage community collaboration and the development of clinical outcome assessments for unmet measurement needs. Next, I'd like to briefly touch upon how the COAs were selected for this pilot compendium. COAs were drawn from two resources, as shown in the slide. CDER's Drug Development Tool Qualification Program was one, and the other was a subset of approved drug labeling. From the COA Qualification Program, we included both qualified tools as well as described ongoing qualification projects. And the intent here is to improve transparency and encourage collaboration, and hopefully to minimize duplication of effort in the development of new COAs. From approved drug labeling, we sought to include COAs based upon a retrospective review of new molecular entity labeling, and only between the years of 2003 and 2014 for this pilot. The labels were carefully reviewed, and clinical outcome assessments from the labeling were discussed with each of the relevant review divisions. So now that I've described what the compendium is, I'd like to make some important points about some of its limitations. The pilot version is limited in scope in large part because we wanted to hear from the broader public about its content, format, and overall usefulness before setting out to expand the compendium. So to reiterate, the pilot includes labeled COAs from a retrospective review of a small subset of approved new molecular entity labeling between 2003 and 2014, and COAs under a qualification program. It does not include labeled COAs from efficacy supplement drug labeling. It does not include labeled COAs from drug labeling prior to 2003 or after 2014. And finally, there are certain cases, such as where FDA has issued guidance that supersedes the drug labeling, where the COA was excluded from the compendium. And so you will also see displayed prominently on the website some language to the effect that sponsors are strongly encouraged to seek the relevant Office of New Drug Review Division's advice early and throughout development to discuss COA selection and implementation specific to their program. And this is irrespective of whether the COA is included in the compendium or not. Okay. So the next slide shows at a high level what are the main components of the COA compendium. Briefly, it's organized into six columns, and the elements are as shown here. The first column describes the disease or condition. Next, the indication or claim found in labeling is described. Next, the outcome or concept that the COA is intended to measure is described. The name of the COA, if it is named, and the type of COA. And also a very high-level description of its context of use. And finally, there's a column for COAs that are within the Drug Development Tool Qualification Program with information on how to contact the particular submitter. So to summarize, in a nutshell, the compendium is a communication tool to promote transparency between FDA and the drug development community, and a method for encouraging collaboration to provide tools for unmet public health needs under the qualification program. And we hope it will encourage the development and use of patient-centric COAs to really capture the patient voice in drug development and in labeling. Again, it is not an all-inclusive list of COAs in labeling. It is not intended in any way to stifle the development of new fit-for-purpose COAs, and sponsors are free to choose other measures as appropriate. And it's not a replacement for existing pathways of communication with the agency. So finally, our next steps are to elicit and review comments from the public regarding the usefulness of the COA and how it could possibly be improved and expanded upon. And we are also in ongoing discussion about next steps, such as development of policies and procedures and or guidance document as appropriate. And with that, I thank you for your attention. Now I will transfer this to my colleague, Dr. Patel, who will provide us a tour of the compendium.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Papadopoulos, for passing to me. Now, I am going to share with you where the compendium is located on the website, and the purpose of this talk. Now, there are also other ways to access the compendium. Another one, the popular method is Googling the compendium and takes you there. Also, you can always use the alias fda.gov/COA compendium. But anyway, what I was saying, there are many ways to access a compendium, so I will walk you through where it is located on the FDA website. So you would go under the drugs tab. Under this tab, you're going to go down to navigate the drug section panel, and you will click on development and approval process. Once you clicked on that, it will take you to another screen where you are going to look for development resources. This is where some of the resources, such as compendium, are located on the FDA website. And you will find the compendium under, again, the left panel, and it should take you to the website. Now, this website, we designed it, organized it in a way, in a question and answer format for ease of explaining this new initiative. And you will find some of the information that Dr. Papadopoulos described in her presentation. You know, what is the purpose of the compendium? What are the key considerations? A very important section. And we hope that you, read through the entire website before you actually look at the compendium. And that was really the purpose. So in addition to that, you will find some of the hyperlinks built in the website, such as a compendium download, some of the terms such as COA. You can click on that to explore how is it defined, I guess, perhaps. Some of the programs such as drug development tools programs, you can explore what they are. So those things are built in the content. In addition to that, I'd like to draw your attention to the left side where there's a resources for you box. Here, again, you're going to see hyperlinks to the compendium PDF file. There's a really good blog by Dr. Papadopoulos, Cedar Conversation blog, that really describes this compendium in additional detail and provides additional perspectives. So I highly encourage you to take a look at that and read. There's also a link to the Federal Register notice. We want to hear from you. Is this a good program? Is this something going to provide value to you? Also, if you have any ideas, please, let us know. We want to know those ideas so we can, review those ideas and perhaps put that in action in the future. In addition to that, you will find FAQs relating to the compendium, our qualification program links, and also our clinical outcome assessment website on the FDA. Now, let's take a look at the compendium document. So if you click on this, it will take you to the compendium PDF. So let me make it smaller. Okay, so the compendium is organized by, let me make it a little bigger, organized by Office of New Drugs offices, such as Office of Antimicrobial Products, Office of Drug Evaluation 1, ODE-1, ODE-2, ODE-3, and Office of Hematology and Oncology Products. Within those offices, there are therapeutic divisions. You will find such as anti-infectives, antiviral. So if you go down a little further, you will find some additional information. Again, this is reiterating some of the key considerations. We want to make sure you pay attention to this. Now, you will also find a key box that Dr. Papadopoulos described in her presentation that describes some of the components of the compendium, such as your column 1 to column 6, such as disease condition, COA, COA context use, etc. Now, let's take a look at an example of one of the division. So antiviral division, here you will find, one second, let me make it a little bigger. You will find the columns from disease and condition to clinical outcome assessment information. Here you will find name of the conditions or disease. They are listed in alphabetical order. You will also find if there's a FDA guidance available, you can certainly click on that and that will get you to a guidance search screen. And you will find additional information such as the indication or a target indication you will find in the qualification program, which are highlighted in blue. Now, if you are interested perhaps in working with the instrument developer for this particular qualification program, which is the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, you can click on this link. It will take you to another screen where we give you additional details about who is the instrument developer. There is contact information, which you may consider perhaps in exploring. In addition to that, there are additional details about the program. So I think that's kind of wraps up. You can certainly walk through this, and I'm sure many of you already looked through this compendium. So I'm going to pass it back to Dr. Papadopoulos, who will moderate the panel discussion section.
All right. So thank you very much for that tour of the compendium. Now I'd like to reintroduce our panelists. We have Dr. Paul Klutz from the Office of Hematology and Oncology Products. Dr. Christina Fan from the Division of Anesthesia, Analgesia, and Addiction Products, and Dr. Andrew Mulberg from Division of Gastroenterology and Inborn Error Products. So we want to sort of provide a diverse perspective from the various review divisions and clinical review divisions within O&D, and so I'd like to first turn it over to Dr. Klutz to provide some comments.
And thank you for such a great talk and introducing everyone to this effort. I think the first thing that strikes me is that this is a great effort at some transparency in a very complicated and challenging area, which is clinical outcomes assessment. It has such great opportunity and yet is quite a complicated area to design a tool that would satisfy FDA requirements in order to show safety and efficacy of a drug product. From our perspective, from hematology and oncology products, it's been said many times that the patient perspective could be assessed in a better way and is an important component given the fact that our diseases are life-threatening, they cause symptoms, and the therapies that we use themselves cause symptoms. So we're very interested in finding out more rigorous ways to take a look at clinical outcomes assessments in oncology. As far as the COA compendium itself, I think I can't agree more that this is the beginning, not the end of a discussion on what kind of clinical outcome assessment can be integrated in a clinical trial. Mainly for one reason is that the contexts are can be so vastly different. Even within a single disease, how the trial is set up is so important. And so I think that this is going to offer a nice beginning for sponsors to take a look at what's been done before, about what are some of the tools that are of interest to the FDA, and use that as a springboard for further communication with us in this sort of within the IND or the drug development process.
Thank you very much. And I think, you know, we can't emphasize too much that this is really a communication tool, and we don't see it as a resource for drug developers to just take the tool, grab, and go, in essence, without close communication with the FDA. So now I'd like to hear from Dr. Fan if what your perspective is on this new tool.
First of all, I would like to thank everybody who has been involved with this development of this new COA compendium. And from my division's point of view, we are involved mostly subjective measures in terms of efficacy support. And I would like to reemphasize that this COA compendium right now has a lot of limitations. We do not have all the indications listed there, and we do not have all the important efficacy measurement tools listed there. We refer you to guidance document for more detailed information, and I would like to reemphasize the importance of talking with the review division. When you have like a new measurement tool that you would like to use in clinical trial, you may want to include those as like exploratory endpoints, and you most importantly you want to talk with the review division to see if those are acceptable, and also keep your communication with the review division all the way through your drug development program, including like a pre-IND end of phase 2 meetings and other guidance meetings, including those phase 3 protocols, and submit your protocols with like questions, and try to get feedback from the review division before you start to enroll the study subjects into the clinical trial.
Thank you very much. I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Mollberg. Dr. Mollberg, how do you view the compendium?
I would also like to thank you, Dr. Papadopoulos, and the COA staff for inviting gastroenterology and Bonaire products to be part of this collaborative effort. I personally, and we as a division, really vehemently support these types of initiatives when it especially addresses the unmet medical needs that are so common in what we face in our division, particularly in inborn error products development. We obviously cover many different diversified areas, gastroenterology, hepatology, as well as inborn error products, and some of those are currently listed on the COA compendium. But to Drs. Klutz and Fong's earlier comments, I would underscore that the enthusiasm for this instrument development really needs to be replicated in the community as well as replicated in the engagement of patients and the academics to really do these things prospectively. I think I would just offer that too often in our drug development programs that we evaluate in our division, I always remind the sponsors to bring these paradigms earlier in the development rather than necessarily what they believe has been just voiced with the academic community. We're very much open to collaboration with you as a group, and really just again applaud the efforts that Dr. Papadopoulos and the COA staff have implemented here, and I'm really thrilled to be part of it.
So thank you all for your perspectives. And now the panel session is concluded, and we will start with our Q&A session.
marks the end of our presentation segment. If you haven't entered your questions already, please do so at this time so that we may address as many as possible. We'll begin the Q&A shortly. Please don't disconnect. As a reminder, this webinar offers one CE towards RAC recertification. A certificate of attendance will be awarded upon completion of the survey. A link to the survey will be sent to you within 48 hours of the webinar.
And thank you for listening to our question and answer session. My name is Dr. Michelle Campbell. I'm a reviewer on the COA staff. Our first question is going to go to Dr. Papadopoulos. Who is the intended audience for this compendium?
So the intended audience is really broad. As I mentioned, it includes multiple internal and external stakeholders. Primarily, we think that this compendium will be used by those in the drug development community. And we also think that it will be useful for patient groups potentially to see where there may be some gaps in patient-centered outcome measures, as well as, you know, other regulatory bodies and academic investigators, and the broader instrument development community, among others.
Great. And Dr. Papadopoulos, can you tell us what does it mean if a COA does not appear in the compendium?
So that's a great question, and we've heard this a couple of times, this question before. The COA compendium is not intended to be an all-inclusive list of clinical outcome assessments that have been used or that might be used. So I think it's very important to realize it. And you'll notice that there are approved labeling that is not represented in this version of the pilot compendium. Importantly, it's very narrow in scope. We wanted to start off small to get feedback from the public. So if the COA is not listed there, it really has no implication as to, you know, its potential utility or acceptability.
This question is for Dr. Papadopoulos, and I hope that one of our review division colleagues can chime in on this answer. But can we provide an example to our audience on what it might look like for a sponsor to use the COA compendium successfully?
So that's a great question. The drug companies can really look at this. Probably the pilot version will be, because it does omit many different disease areas, will be limited in its utility in many cases. And there will always be cases where, we just can't describe all the possible scenarios for drug development. But for example, you could look at it within your disease area and see what has been done to date and what is in development, and use it as really a springboard for communication. So my sense is that you would use it to enhance communications with the agency, not to replace communications. And so that would be the biggest success. I'd like to turn it over to Dr. Mulberg.
Andrew Mulberg. So to use this as an example, the six-minute walk test has been used for the approval of several products in various mucopolysaccharide doses. And I think that's a great example of an endpoint that has been utilized. And I would love to see some further discourse around endpoints, particularly in rare diseases that are reflecting maybe multidimensional organ dysfunction and or contributions to functional disability, like a six-minute walk test. But I would use that as an opportunity not to necessarily replicate every inborn errors of metabolism approach to saying, well, five other sponsors have used it, so I guess I can use it. That would be the springboard for me with coming to the division under some auspice in whichever you format your regulatory professionals will use, type C or otherwise. But that would be my addition to the comments.
One thing that we haven't talked about yet, but the compendium doesn't provide information on all that would be needed to include into a drug development program in terms of efficacy assessments. And so, you know, because a tool is listed there, this does not imply that you could get approval just by using that outcome assessment. So for this reason, you know, we really emphasize the importance of discussing with the review division.
Our next question would go to our review division colleagues. Regarding early communication with the review division when selecting an instrument, are we referring to type C meetings or something less formal?
This is Christina. Sometimes you can even send your questions and asking just for a written response. And when you send something for the review division to look at, you need to provide the rationale about why you think this instrument you selected is regarded as well-defined and reliable.
Yeah, this is Paul Klutz. I would agree that it would be better to be a more formal communication with the FDA. I mean, one thing that needs to be clear is that COA assessments are just, and I'm speaking from an oncology perspective, are just as important as a radiographic assessment or a survival endpoint, and we wouldn't just pick up the phone and chat about what the criteria are for PFS analysis and statistical design of a clinical trial. So I think you'd want to make it a formal communication, and whether that be a written response only, which is actually a nice way to do things sometimes, or whether it would be a face-to-face meeting, either of those I think would be my preference.
Our next question is for you, Dr. Klutz. Could you comment on inclusion tools for describing adverse events from the patient perspective, including the PRO CTCAE? Why is this not included, and what would be necessary to include it?
So thank you for that question. I mean, obviously we're very interested, as I said before, in oncology and finding tools that help describe safety and tolerability, and certainly that's an instrument that's of interest. Why any instrument isn't on the COA compendium really has to do with the eligibility criteria that were prospectively applied to putting instruments on the COA compendium. So I could let Electra speak to how that process, or to reiterate how that process occurred.
Right, and I think that's a great point. Again, you know, if a tool isn't there, you know, you can't really draw any conclusions. But I think that, you know, there are going to be important tools in drug development. For example, the compendium does not include biomarkers. And so, you know, we know that biomarkers are also critical elements of drug development, as Dr. Klutz was alluding to. It's very limited in scope at the present, and will never be an all-inclusive list.
This question is again for you, Dr. Klutz. In oncology in particular, there are COAs that listed that are general and non-tumor specific. Will sponsors need to demonstrate that these COAs are appropriate in the specific type of cancer?
So I think this speaks to the other key point that a lecturer has made and that we've all made, and that is that this is a springboard for further communication, and that many times these things will be somewhat context dependent, and it will depend on how the sponsor would intend to use the tool. I think, you know, our PRO guidance is pretty explicit in the fact that there's a difference between a primary endpoint of a clinical trial being the COA, there's a difference between the endpoint being a secondary endpoint, and then there's a difference between an endpoint being a further supportive data and exploratory data. And I think that context is so very important and can't be communicated. All possible scenarios can't be communicated. So again, I would just reiterate that you'd want to come and speak with us about how you intend to use a tool that's on the compendium.
Dr. Papadopoulos, the next question is for you. We've been receiving a couple questions wanting to talk about the future direction of the compendium. So our audience would like to know, our timeline for presenting the next version of the compendium? What is our planning for the updates of the compendium? How will the compendium relate to the PRO guidance? And why was the 2003 chosen as the beginning of the date range?
Well, to answer the last question, I think, we had to start somewhere, so we picked 2003. There's, I don't think, much more to it, unless, Dr. Patel, you have some.
Yeah, I think that was more of an arbitrary date. Initially, the original efforts were underway in 2013, I guess, around that time, so they want to look at like 10 years from 2013, so we just kept 2003. So there's really no scientific explanation for that.
So, I mean, in terms of the compendium, we do expect it to be a living document and something that's updated on a regular basis. And we also are in ongoing discussions now about how to expand upon the compendium. A lot of that will be driven by the comments that we receive in the comment period. And so we welcome comments from the public. If you haven't already submitted comments to the docket, we'd like to hear about those. And the date for comments closes on March the 14th. So it's around the corner. But we have discussed some ideas such as including efficacy supplements. So that's really a very large proportion of the new approvals yearly and would provide some additional indications. And we also want to continue to use it as a way of encouraging collaboration under the qualification program. And we will continue to keep it up to date with disease-specific guidances as those are issued. So I think, you know, this area of clinical outcome assessments is extremely dynamic and evolving, and having a tool like this will really help with sort of keeping up to date and keeping everything state of the art.
The next question is for Dr. Papadopoulos or Dr. Perdell. Can the agency clarify if all the COAs listed in the tool supports approval of the respective indications, or are some still exploratory?
Hi, this is Dr. Patel. So tools that we looked at for the purpose of the pilot compendium, they appeared in labeling, specifically in section 14, and they were used either as a primary or secondary or a co-primary endpoint. We did not include any exploratory endpoints. Now, you will also find some of the qualification project. Now, those have not been in the labeling, obviously, because they are still currently under development in collaboration with external stakeholders such as consortia, patient advocacy group, etc. So those are not would not be considered exploratory. They are qualification projects.
My next question is for Dr. Malberg. How does this benefit orphan drugs, the COA compendium, and how do you qualify, well, a primary endpoint as a COA?
Thank you for the most difficult question of the afternoon. I think I'd answer the first question by saying that this compendium just doesn't benefit, in my mind, orphan product development. It benefits all types of product development by having a set of examples to elicit the discourse with the regulatory agency on how to move, you know, programs forward. Frankly, from a rare disease perspective, I think there's great opportunity in the exploration of functional disability and functional endpoints and patient-reported outcomes, particularly in rare diseases, and ones that would be ideally suited for pre-competitive space discussions amongst whatever companies are necessarily on the line. I think too much in rare disease drug development seems to be focused solely on the individual product development without any real cognizance that if all companies, small, large, or otherwise, work within pathways other than through the Critical Path Institute, which is a resource-limited organization, and did some of this work pre-competitively, I would envision a point of our lifetimes where these would be primary endpoints. That requires a fair amount of work and discussion, but I would encourage the person who asked the question to initiate those discussions with his or her colleagues and move the bar forward.
Next question is for Dr. Patel. What were the main sources of information in development of the pilot COA compendium? Are we basing this on existing labeling or recent clinical outcomes?
So the main sources of information is really drug labeling that we looked at from 2003 to 2014. New molecular entity labeling specifically, and we also looked at some of the medical review documents as well, if they were available, to sort of clarify, what exactly, what scale was used, perhaps. So drug labeling, medical reviews, so those are really publicly available documents. That's what we looked at.
For our next question, I'm going to start with Dr. Papadopoulos and then probably send it over to our review division colleagues. Why is the compendium important, and what does it mean for patients, and what does it mean for drug developers?
So the COA compendium is really meant to foster the whole patient-focused drug development initiative and to help us focus on identifying outcome assessments that, you know, assess how patients feel and function. And so, you know, we have heard extensively from patient groups that oftentimes the instruments that are used in clinical trials really doesn't necessarily capture what's important for them and relevant for them and their disease.
Now, also you will find in the last column, the COA qualification information, the column number 6, you will also find the links to our qualification website where you will be able to find additional information about those qualification projects that are listed on the compendium. So we already have some of them. Now, however, if you have ideas and you think there's certain information that you think it may be valuable to add to the compendium, please, we encourage you to submit those comments in the public docket.
And one final question we have. At some point, will all disease states be representative in the compendium?
So that would clearly not be possible, given that there are thousands of possible diseases. So that's really not the goal of the compendium. But it's really, again, it's as a starting point for communications with the agency and a way of compiling relevant information into a single resource to enhance the communication.
And it looks like we have time for one more question. The question is, what is a sponsor's obligation to make a COA available if it goes through the drug development tool qualification process?
Right. So the qualification program, the whole intent behind that is to develop fit-for-purpose tools for use in drug development that can be made publicly available. And so, you know, I would encourage the person asking the question to, review the guidance. It's a very useful guidance, and we also have several resources on our website, which we can leave you with. Right. So that's the end of our Q&A period, and we thank you for bearing with us. I know we had some technical difficulties, but hopefully they've been resolved. And so I'd just like to sort of leave the audience with a few key takeaways from this session. Basically, I hope you've learned that we really do encourage the development and use of endpoints and outcome assessments that really do capture what's important and meaningful to patients for use in drug development. We hope that we've made it clear, and I think we've done a pretty good job, that the compendium is intended to be used as a communication tool. It's for clarity and transparency. For the research community and the drug development community. And finally, we do actively seek feedback from the public on the utility of the compendium and any ideas for future expansion and improvement on the compendium.
On behalf of CDER SBIA, we'd like to thank you for your attendance. See you next time.